All right, you're on the Arms Room Show with Glenn.
Andrew.
And thank you to all of our patrons who are supporting the show continually. We appreciate your help in keeping the show going and also helping Independence Training to do other things in the community like Stop the Bleed classes, law enforcement training, church and school trainings, etc. We use our patron money for that just as much as we use it to keep the show going on right here. Remember that if you're a patron and you're not listening to the extra show, if you're a $10 above patron, you're missing out on some really great content. And also make sure that you are sending us your show ideas. Pretty much whatever you guys ask for, you're going to hear a show about. If it's your idea and you're a patron, you pretty much help us run the show. So you should definitely send us your show ideas to info@trainingaz.com. Shoot us a quick email. Independence Day Action Rifle Match is damn near full and is happening next weekend on Sunday. So just a few days away, a little bit less than a week now, and it is going to be an awesome match. We're doing something different this year we've never done before. I'm kind of excited to see how it goes. It's going to be tons of fun. You will be done in plenty of time. 3 p.m. is typically when we wrap stuff up, all the prizes, everything's done, and everyone's leaving and going home. And, you know, fireworks around here in Arizona don't, like, start till fucking 9 o'clock anyway because it's so late, but the sun goes down. So anyways, probably only a few slots left. When we recorded this show a few days ago, it was – I think we were at 58 out of 70. So like we're really close. If you're not in it, you need to get in it. All right. The Red Clover Coffee giveaway in line with Dave, the double Ds, the Daves, Dave from Red Clover Coffee, and Dave, our medic who also used to be a show producer and came on the show a few weeks ago and is now designing labels for Red Clover Coffee because he's a hell of a good artist. That giveaway, you're going to get a copy of one of Dave's prints, which is amazing, good enough to frame and put up, no shit. You're going to get some of the new coffee from Red Clover Coffee, and you're going to get some of their new swag. The deadline is the 12th of July, all right? Now, I'll tell you right now, as of today's show, we have received no entries. So if you enter, you've got a pretty good fucking chance of winning at this point. I don't understand our contest, our giveaways. Sometimes we'll have like 50, 60, 70 entries. We'll just have, we got all this shit to freaking weed through. And other times we'll get like 10 or 12. So I don't know what the hell your guys' problem is, but this is a great opportunity to get some cool stuff and do it really easily. All you have to do is have a Red Clover Coffee shirt, hat, sticker, or the coffee itself, some type of swag from Red Clover Coffee, one of their mugs, whatever. Take an adventurous or exciting photo of yourself with the swag on or in the photo at least. Email it to us, info@trainingaz.com, and bam, you're entered in the contest. And as of right now, you got a really good chance of winning. So get on it.
Can I enter? What if I submit my photos?
you fucking win, I guess. All right. Crazy shit being said in the news. I don't know if there's anything else worth talking about other than this. There's been some crazy stuff that's happened, but the president of the United States went on stage. At this point, it's a fucking stage. He went on stage and said to the American people, essentially, you don't need an AR-15 because you won't win. If you're fighting the government in anything less than an F-15 and a nuclear weapon, then you're not going to win. You can't fight us, is what he said. Fuck that. When the leader of a quote-unquote free country gets up on the national stage and tells people they don't need something, trust me, my friends, that is when you need it the most. Read a damn history book and find out this has been done dozens of times before. This is a time more than any time that you need what you're being told you don't need. Get the gear. Get the training. Train your family. Train your people in everything. Start getting more physically fit. Start getting your comms plans together. Start working on your medical plans. Start stocking up on some stuff. I'm not saying you got a civil war coming, but I am saying your government fucking hates you. Get on board with the idea. They don't want you to be free. Get on board with the idea and get as many on board with you as possible. if people don't believe it after the crazy stuff that's happened over the last couple of years, I don't know what to tell them. Find yourself, like us, cutting friends and family maybe a little bit farther out of the circle just because of their beliefs and because of their apathy, more than their beliefs or their actions. So, crazy shit happening, man. Crazy shit. All right. I don't know. What else happened in the news? That giant freaking condo collapsed.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That was bananas.
As far as right now, it's just one dead and 50 are still missing.
So that's the kind of crazy random stuff that can happen to you. I mean, you just don't know what's coming down the pike at you. Carry the appropriate tools with you. God forbid that kind of stuff happen. But it does happen nonetheless. Whatever tools you may think, whether it's personal GPS trackers all the way to medical gear, lights, whatever. That's crazy. My heart goes out to the families of those people and families who were caught in that. Man, I don't know how you prepare for that other than just to prepare yourself and the people around you as best as you possibly can for crazy scenarios. But understand that this kind of stuff does happen. And unfortunately, the more it happens, the more people realize, hey, man, I should probably do something to prepare myself.
Yeah.
We'll just jump right in the red wire gear moment. Administratively change your batteries. Batteries go dead in all battery-driven devices. Get a battery checker. It's probably one of the best investments I ever made. They're less than $20 or somewhere around there. And basically, you just touch the battery to the two contacts, and it tells you how juiced up the battery is. If it's below, 50%, I just trash it and put a new battery in. Easy. Batteries are inexpensive when you buy them in bulk. Buy them hundreds at a time. They're still not that expensive even when you do that. You spend a couple hundred bucks right now, you can get hundreds of the batteries that you use. And then when they get below 50%, order some more. Whether it's CR123s, AAs, AAAs, 9 volts, whatever it is you use. Look around your house. Smoke detectors, flashlights, remote controls, whatever. Administratively change the batteries. When my mouse on my computer starts acting a little odd, I just change the battery. I don't wait for the battery to go dead. Because it might go dead at that moment. I'm really trying to do some work. Or I'm really trying to get something done. Right? And everybody knows how much of a bummer dead batteries are. I don't want dead batteries in my weapon light or my flashlight or my red dot sight or my radios or anything like that. If you have rechargeable batteries, administratively charge them. Don't wait for them to go dead. Consider the type of batteries that they are, lithium ions, nickel metal hydrides, the LiPo batteries, whatever. Like, consider what the charge cycle needs to be, but administratively charge them instead of letting them go dead. Red Wire Gear moment brought to you by RedWireGear.com. Our topic today, structural tactics for the average person. So I'm actually going to refer back to a photo that we posted up on our Instagram for Independence Training if you follow us at all. And basically what it was is some rough lessons learned from the intro structural class we put on for our alumni then a couple weeks ago at the TAC Hub facility. Now, Drew and I were at the TAC Hub facility earlier today, moving in more furniture, getting the curtains up, giving a tour to one of the local manufacturers, kind of getting some other stuff in place, playing with the new remote control targets that we have there, all kinds of cool stuff that we have going on at this facility. With all that being said, you need to train for structural work because you're in structures. And remember that these are tactics, and good tactics don't require shooting. Good shooting does require good tactics, but it's not the other way around. You can use structural movement tactics without a gun. You're in an airport. You're in an office building. Maybe your job doesn't allow it. Whatever. Maybe it's just not the right time or the right place or a situation that involves you. You don't want to pull out your gun right now. You're just trying to get the hell out of here. Structural tactics are important to know. Not only are they important to know, but they're important to adapt to contextual environments. I appreciate if you're a SWAT guy and you're listening. I appreciate if you're a former infantryman, you're like, man, I spent 5 years kicking in doors in Iraqistan or whatever. That's fucking neat, dude. That's really cool. You did that in a very different type of environment with a very specific set of TTPs, with a specific organization, unit, or agency. It is important that now, as a free-thinking individual, you contextually look at your skill sets and say, can I do this by myself? What if I had to drag my kid along with me? What if I had to drag my significant other with me? If I have to move through a structure, is my tribe, friends, family, whatever, coworkers even, ready to move with me? Are they ready to understand this? Even if they don't have guns, even if they don't have whatever, rocket launchers, whatever the fuck it is you carry. Are they ready to move along with you? It is the information you have contextual to the real world application. I will tell you, for most people who have done this professionally, it's not. Because they haven't ever applied it to the context of single person arm movement and structures. To start all this off, I'll tell you, this is the most dangerous shit that you can possibly do. Most of the time, it is a dice roll. Because you are one person, it is difficult to cover all your angles. It's difficult to see into every dead space. It's difficult to move hastily and expediently through an area and not miss something because you're only one person. So this is the most dangerous stuff you'll practice doing, in my opinion, right? To also include things like vehicle work or work in the dark and all that kind of stuff. Any time where you're not just on a big, giant, square, flat range learning how to shoot a fucking target. This is dangerous stuff. You want to avoid doing this at all costs. I'm not talking about you need to go learn how to clear your own house. All right. Yeah. Is there some need for that? Yes. There are some times where I need to go do that. But that's the exception, not the rule. If I hear a bump in the night, I'm not clearing my own house. I want them to come to me. The defender has the advantage. Right. The attacker does not. You're moving into a space against a determined defender who holds the high ground, so to speak. And don't think I know my house so perfectly. Well, maybe you do and maybe you don't, but there's still plenty of dark spaces and dead spaces you're not going to be able to cover 100% of the time. And what's the context of the person that you're going up against? Are you a cop who's trying to find a suspect who just ran into a store? Are you a, you know, armed citizen trying to move your way through your own home because you're trying to go check on your kids because there was something weird that you'd heard upstairs? Are you an armed citizen trying to get out of an area and you're just trying to move out of the space? No, maybe no gun in hand, right? Again, maybe you're in a place where you can't carry a gun or don't have access to one. What is the context of what you're doing, right? Are you part of a multi-person team in a foreign country kicking in doors and clearing room to room looking for high-value targets and snatching and grabbing people? That's an entirely different type of context, and it's going to take a different mindset. So look at that first. What is your real context? Most people want to stack up outside a door, stack up with a two-person team. You don't stack up with a two-person team. You know what I mean? That's not how you handle that. And maybe if you've done that in the past, you're like, well, that's all I was taught to do. Well, I'm fucking telling you, that's not how we do it anymore, right? These kinds of tactics are constantly evolving, and they'll be contextual all the time. If you were to grab the majority of our instructor team has some level of structural experience, some level of it. Some of our guys are incredibly experienced in it. They spent the majority of their, you know, gunslinging career, so to speak, doing this. Some of them not as much. I'm probably in the midpoint of that. With that being said, if you grabbed all of us and you said, teach this to these five people, you would see slightly different stuff. Concepts would all basically be the same, but you would see some slightly different movement because this guy's more athletic than this other guy, or this guy likes this technique a little bit more. When this guy runs his long gun, he runs it like this or whatever, right? You can't just grab three different people from three different, you know, backgrounds and toss them in the same thing and expect them all to perform the same way. It's not going to happen. My point being, there is more than one way to skin a cat here. So the things that I'm going to talk about right now, one, of course, do not replace actual training. This is more of me speaking to you. If you have no training, this should hopefully inspire you to go get some real hands-on training doing this. Or if you have some training or some real-world experience, this should hopefully inspire you to consider if what you think is the right answer truly is the right answer. And it might be. The first thing I want to bring up again is this is an incredibly dangerous thing to do. Arm movement through structures, especially as one individual, sucks. If you've ever been in a class doing single-person arm movement structures and you didn't die, the class sucked. That's the way I always look at every, you know, structural movement class is if you did it successfully every single time and you never got surprised, you never got ambushed, then they were fucking jerking you off and trying to make you feel good as a student so you'd come back. And you guys, I just had a freaking discussion with our instructors and our group thread that we have about this shit, about masturbatory range drills. My God, do we see this crap online? It's constant. It's like a constant stream of stinky shit that comes down the butthole of fucking social media. Had to keep watching these morons on ranges doing these masturbatory drills. I'm going to sprint 75 yards without my gun up and then come to a stop 5 yards in front of the target and shoot 10 rounds into it. Can you give me any context to this drill? No, we're going to call it the, you know, Master Blaster drill. Okay. Whatever, dude. It just, you got to have context to this stuff, okay? Be so careful of who you seek advice from on these topics. Make sure it's contextual, right? If you are a current special operations team, if you're a current SWAT team member, don't go and learn from someone that doesn't have current valid experience in the tactics, TTPs, and counter tactics currently being deployed on today's battlefields, whether that's home or abroad. I would never, a ranger team coming to do, you know, learn entry points for me, I'm not the guy for that. That's not my wheelhouse. That's not where I would be. But there's plenty of people, oh yeah, I'll teach that. I'll show these guys what the fuck. No, you fucking won't. Because your context, your counter tactics, your intelligence level on that, and I don't mean intelligence like dumb or stupid. I mean like the battlefield intel, your actual knowledge of what's going on out there today might not be valid. It's cool that you did this for 20 years, 10 years ago. What do you know about what's happening now? Because the first time I was taught to enter a room is not the way I am currently teaching people to enter rooms. In 20 years, things have changed. It's really important that people keep that in mind when they're seeking this kind of training. So there's a few things that we have to consider. And anytime that we start any kind of structural class, this is always the first five things I tell people. Right? You heard me reference these five things today. Yeah. when we were talking at the shoot house. There's five things I tell people before any structural class. Before we get going, before we learn techniques, before we learn how to move around a corner, before we learn how to do all these things, before we learn how to go into a room or bypass portals or do any of that kind of stuff, number one, you have to imagine your environment. You have to consider your environment and use your imagination a little bit onto what you might be walking into. If I'm going to move into a room, what do I expect it to look like? That way, I don't have to move into a room. And this is just one of many teaching points. Again, this whole thing is not replacing training. I'm just giving you guys some ideas here. If I have to walk into a room and assess all of the things and all of the people and all of the everything, that is a lot of brain work for one person to do. So if I can imagine, okay, I'm trying to get the hell out of here and I'm about to move into, kitchen. I'm going to take the back door out of this restaurant because it's getting shot up by Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs came in to shoot his girlfriend who's fucking the cook or whatever, and I'm out of here, right? I'm just going to backdoor this shit with my kids and get the fuck out of here. As I'm scooting out the back door, I'm going to go through the kitchen. What do I expect to see in the kitchen? What kind of hazards and things in my way? I might expect slick floors in a kitchen. I might expect really good lighting in a kitchen. I might expect crowded areas in a kitchen. I might expect trays of dishes and food in a kitchen. I might expect stoves with hot food and things like that in a kitchen. You follow my drift here, right? Like that's what I expect. That's important because as I move into that area, I now have things in the environment I might be able to use to my advantage. I also am not going to be stunned or startled or surprised by anything when I open the door. I know exactly what I'm looking at. The other factor of why it's important to kind of use your imagination here is because then things will stand out easier to me if they don't belong. If I'm cutting depth and angle on a corner and I'm looking into a small room and I see, oh, there's a washing machine. Well, what could I expect on the other side of the washing machine, Drew?
A wall.
Or a?
Shower?
Dryer.
Dryer.
It's a washing machine. I would expect a dryer. I would expect a small room, a short room. I would expect something not that big. I mean, the majority of laundry rooms I've been into in people's houses are not fucking massive. They're usually one of the smallest rooms in the house.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting a short room. Is it likely, possible but probably not probable, right? When they say possible, possibility over probability. Is it possible that there's someone crouching like a gargoyle on top of the dryer? Sure, I suppose. Is it possible that someone that I'm moving in to try to flush out of my house is doing that? Probably not. Now, is it a meth head? Am I a cop searching a house and there's a meth head hiding from me? Those fuckers will smash themselves into a rat hole, all right? They will do whatever it takes to hide and get away. They will climb up in the goddamn attic. They will smash themselves in the back half of a closet. Yes, context-driven again, right? But if I'm just trying to move through a house, I'm going to go check on my kids because someone has penetrated into my house. It's probably not a meth head who's going to hide from me in a rat hole. This person intently came into my home. They're going to be in a position that benefits them. So if I look into spaces, I'm going to say, if I was in there trying to benefit myself, where would I be? I have to use my imagination a little bit and consider the environment altogether. What am I likely to see moving into this? Look, all this stuff can essentially be used outdoors as well in a confined space. What am I likely to see? What am I likely to encounter? These are just examples, right? The second thing that I'm looking for is to consider my depth and angle. The more depth and more angle I can have, the better I'm going to be if I can own both of those things. If I can't own depth, then I need to own angle. There's extreme examples of this usually outside of structures, right? If someone's up on top of a mountain looking down at you, you're fucked. You know what I mean? You need really incredible depth and angle control to stay out of their line of sight because they have massive depth and massive angle. Now, inside of a structure, it's typically not as bad. And you can play this game a little bit where basically, you know, you can line up with someone, say, on a corner in a room and start, you know, what the old school method would call slicing the pie, but is now what we consider depth and angle. I start playing the depth and angle game on them. You will see that you may be able to see them or they you at times where you can't see each other just because the other person has better depth and usually better angle. So inside of a structure, I want as much depth and angle as possible. It's very common for a lot of people. They cut in very close. They hug a doorway to look through it. They hug a wall to look around it. Get depth and angle. Get on the other side of the fucking room. Now, don't do this at the detriment of mobility, but get on the other side of the room. Get the hell away from the edge of stuff unless the other person has way more depth and angle than you do, in which case you might need to be hugged up on something a little bit more because now you're literally fucking hiding from them if that's the issue. Now, something that we'll find, a mistake that people will make within this depth and angle issue kind of goes into the next part, which is throttle control. With throttle control, there's times I'm going to be throttling up and throttling down according to the expediency of the situation. So, for example, if Drew and I have our kids at the house and I hear someone upstairs yelling, "Daddy, Daddy, help me," I'm going to be busting my way through shit. And as I encounter problems at dead spaces, dark spaces, whatever, in the downstairs area, if I can't flip on lights to illuminate those, shine lights in them real quickly to briefly take a look at them, I'm probably going to be bypassing those areas with nothing more than a cursory glance because I have an expedient problem that I need to get to. As I approach that expedient problem, depending on the context of what's happening, are they still yelling? Do I hear breaking glass? Do I hear someone's voice I don't recognize? I may go straight busting into the room, surprise motherfuckers, or I may throttle down just a little bit and start playing the depth and angle game to make sure that I'm not stepping into a problem where I'm just going to get fucking smoked.
I see typically in class, this is what people struggle with a lot, is throttling up and down.
They have a hard time adjusting that flow. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, man, this is a big open space. Throttle up and get the fuck through it. You know what I mean? You've opened yourself to too many angles. Look at how many angles. People are in an area where they have 100 degrees of angle they have to cover, which you physically cannot do with your 45-degree angled vision as a human being. And they're trying to cover this massive angle. I'm like, dude, throttle up and get the fuck out of here. Well, yeah, but if I do that, just get out of here. Like, you're in a bad place. Contextually driven, of course. But it's like, you're in a bad spot. Don't be here right now.
Yeah.
You need to be in a better position. Throttle up to get to that better position. Throttle down when you're in that better position.
I think people have a hard time throttling down.
Yeah, to an extent, until it comes to doorways. I always see people having a hard time throttling up getting through a doorway. It's like, look, man, be into the room or out of the room, but don't be halfway in and out. And never hang out in doorways, of course. Most of you guys probably heard of them called the fatal funnel. That's because they are. It's a terrible place to be. Get in the doorway or out of the doorway. Don't be hanging out in damn doorways unless you're holding down security and securing a hallway using a doorway. That's a whole other topic. But don't, as you're moving, get in or out. Be in a room or out of a room. Don't be halfway, right? And that's where they have throttle control issues. Mm-hmm. I've seen as well, is just getting – if they go – they want to kind of peek around the corner. They want to move cautiously into the room. It's like, nah, man, you're exposing yourself to a shitload of angle here. Get through the freaking door, right? You've looked at as much of the room as possible before entering the door. Now get through the door. Cover the space you haven't looked at yet. Then check all your dead spaces and voila, get through the damn door, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Throttling up and throttling down is important to put – I always kind of think of it like throttling down as I'm probing the minefield. Right? I'm taking my time like I would in a minefield, making sure I don't step on a mine. Throttling up is like dynamic movement. This is typically when we turn a searching problem into a shooting problem. And this is another place where I see people have throttle control. And if you watch enough videos, you will see what I'm about to explain or about to describe over and over and over again. Someone comes into a space, either throttle up or throttle down, usually throttle down, and they see their opponent around a corner, around a wall, inside a room, whatever. They're playing a little tactical peekaboo, which is problem number one. They're ducking their head in, taking a look, and they start getting shot at. So instead of throttling up and getting in the room and fighting back, they throttle down and duck back out of the room and then wait there. And they're like, oh, shit. And you're like, yeah, oh, shit. They now know where you are. And for all you fucking know, they're moving towards you right now. You don't know because you just took your eyes off of them. You know, and God forbid you are in a team-based environment. You just backed your fucking stack up, you know, or whatever. Or your partner's went in alone. It's like throttle up. Turn the searching problem now into a shooting problem. All those cool guy skills that you practiced on the range, moving and shooting laterally, forward, you know, single-handed, loading on the move, stepping over obstacles, all the cool guy shit that we practice and things like defensive hang and defensive carbine, this is now where you apply it. So, yeah, I'm checking depth and angle, and pow, I identify my opponent. Throttle the fuck up. Get in there with them.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the greatest things I ever heard was I was working – with training alongside, not training, but training alongside a member of the FBI HRT, the hostage rescue team. And he was like, yeah, man, we're just kind of joking about funny tactics that we'd seen. And he was like, yeah, he goes, the HRT actually discovered that we have the highest chance of killing a hostage taker if we're in the room with them. Right. And we kind of laughed about it. And he's like, I mean, honestly, it goes against old school tactics of like, you know, we try to shoot him from like through the doorways. Then they move and now we lose him. And now we got to search again and then we find him. And it's just a freaking nightmare. Just get in the damn room. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can see you, but you can see them. Like, get in the room. You increase your chances drastically. If we're asleep and someone's yelling, dad, help. And I go blasting up the freaking staircase, gun in hands, and they're still screaming. I hear a voice I don't freaking recognize. Boom, I bust through the door and here we go. Mako ma Jesus, and I'm ready to freaking do shit. I'm not going to go, oh, shit. I need to stop. I need to back out of here. There's a dude in here. There's a bad guy, whatever, bad person. Like, no, man, plunge into the room. Get in the damn room. I'll be closer. Increase my chance of success. That violence is part of that throttling up. And most people go, oh, I could do it. I could do it. Look, y'all, I've seen you in the shoot house. I've seen versions of you, variances of you. You know, people I've watched get shot, and I don't even do that much freaking structural training. People who do this kind of stuff all the time could tell you story after story after story after story about every badass on the range who got into an actual practical application and died. Over and over and over and over and over again because they wouldn't throttle up appropriately. When searching problems become shooting problems, it is throttle up time. Get in there and do what you know how to do. All that cool guy shit you do on the square range, now is the time to do it. That's why shooting is such a minuscule part of this, but when it is time to do all that cool shooting shit you know how to do. And that throttle up, this is where it becomes important. we see people get involved in these, what I call the dick dance, but it's basically just like this run and gun. If I poke my head around a corner in the room and shoot, and you poke your head around the corner and shoot, and I poke my head around the corner and shoot, and we're just kind of using this door frame as this intermediate cover, so to speak, between us. And there's a lot of things that aren't being considered here. One, usually this is being done with UTM, sometimes airsoft, so these aren't real bullets actually penetrating any of this material. That's problem number one, which can build some bad habits. Problem number two is you only have so many rounds in this freaking magazine. You're going to run out if you keep pulling this bullshit. And three, of course, is round accountability. Where are all these bullets going when you're not stopping your opponent? We actually had from our alumni event, we had this awesome example of posted on our alumni page. If you're an alumni, you can go look at it. And he posted up, hey, you know, when you suddenly realize, you know, one or two hits doesn't kill the attacker. And they were making an entry. We got this from the camera system that's built in Attack Hub. This guy makes entry, whack, whack. Hits his attacker twice and is like, I'm done. And the attacker just fucking annihilates him, right? Or the defender, I mean, just annihilates mm-hmm. him. And it's like, hey, what have we trained to do? This is what we speak out against all the time in training. The guy showed up, whack, whack, shot him twice. Hey, that's probably all he wants. How do you fucking know that? He didn't even assess through the sights. That dude is done. He just shot him twice, whack, whack, and figured the scenario was over. And instead, the dude got up and was like, you didn't hit me that well. Wham, 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 and emptied his fucking pistol into him. Like, that's another throttle up, throttle down problem. The last bit, the fifth part, is don't get bogged down with indecision, right? Don't get bogged down with indecision. I guess this is thing number four. Don't get bogged down with indecision, right? Make a choice. Don't sit there and second guess yourself. Oh, what did I hear? Did I really see that? Et cetera, et cetera. Make a choice and get in there. Or no, but make a damn choice. Don't get bogged down with indecision. If you think you should yell out, yell out. If you think you should stop here, stop here. If you think you should move into the room, move into the room. Just do it. Don't sit there second guessing yourself. The last one, number five, is to use your environment. Use your environment. If you can reach over and turn on a light switch, reach over and turn on a light switch. But then they can see me. Then you can see them. Whatever advantages they just had just went away. Right, this is full light, not your light only shining forward. Full light of the whole room. It's going to eliminate a shitload of shadows for you. Use those kinds of shadows. Turn on lights and watch shadows move around rooms. Listen for noises. Another advantage of putting on electronic hearing protection before you go moving around a structure. You hear better. You hear people fucking breathing with that stuff on. Use your environment outside. Crunchy leaves. Crunchy rocks. Consider objects that might move if someone's brushing up against them or near them. How are people acting? Use your environment to tell you things. One of the things I like to do in our home that's really easy, and I've talked about this on the show before. In fact, we even gave some away one time as a giveaway. Sunbeam makes these badass motion-activated nightlights. And they just turn blue when something walks past them or a movement. But what else is really cool is they have a battery, an internal battery, and if the power is cut from them, so if the lights go out, power goes out, they turn bright white, so they then illuminate way better, and it's not like a soft blue glow. It's like full-on bright light. So one, you know your power's been cut, and two, you can actually pull them out of the wall, close the little prong, and use them as a flashlight. They have a little mode you can turn it on where the beam goes out the top. And they're good for like 11 hours if you leave them on the whole time in white mode on battery. So, I mean, they're really awesome tools. They're good for the kids as they move around the house. They're good for me as I move around the house at night. They're also good in using your environment, knowing if someone's walking around your house. If you think there's someone upstairs, you don't have a dog wandering around up there, a kid wandering around there. You look upstairs and the little motion lights are on. Yep. Now, would a smart burglar or would-be violent criminal yank it out of the wall? Yeah, maybe. But you might get lucky and be able to see that movement. Any other motion lights work just as well. So just things to consider in using your environment. There's other examples here, but I don't want to get too stuck on this. So I want to share with you guys the lessons learned, stand by, from our event this last Tuesday, because it was really good. And these lessons were mostly learned by people who had never been in this environment before. So there was only two people, I believe, out of about 35 shooters, there's only two, maybe three, who'd ever been into a shoot house type environment before. And it was very limited, even their experience, except for one guy who does a lot of training in those environments because of his job. most of these people didn't even know that that's what they were going to do. They just showed up and they were like, yeah, this sounds awesome. Alumni event. Let's do it. And then I was like, surprise, you're doing force on force. And they were like, what? And it's like, yep, here we go. I like that kind of stuff. It's like, hey, man, can you really do this? What do you know? And it exposes gaps in people's training and knowledge base that they hopefully choose to go back and fill. So here were the lessons learned as we did the debrief at the end of the event. The first one was move. A lot of people got bogged down with indecision, and they haven't really practiced moving and shooting enough. They're used to shooting from a static position. So as soon as they started firing, they just did the old stand and deliver, and they shot and thus got shot a lot. Some people got shot a lot. No plan survives contact, right? No plan survives contact with the enemy is the full term of that. But the idea is you may have the world's best laid plan. The tactics and techniques, understanding tactics and techniques. I've heard some people's just hilarious plans. Like, I'll use this as an example because it's always one of the funniest things I've ever heard. I was at an event and I was talking to this guy. It was not a training event. It was a social event. And I'm talking to this guy about guns. He came up to me, hey, here are your gun guy. I'm like, oh God, here we go. And he goes, I got this Glock. It was actually kind of funny because he'd come up to me to see if I wanted to buy his Glock 19 because he'd bought a Glock 19, but it was defective and Glock wouldn't take it back and the gun store wouldn't take it back. And he contacted Glock and they wouldn't take it back because it shoots low left. No matter how he moves or adjusts the sights, it shoots low left. I wonder why it does that. So I'm like, well, shit, man, I'll give you like $200 for it. It's obviously a piece of shit. And he was like, oh, I'd really like to get like maybe, you know, $500 out of it. And that's what I paid. I'm like, I'm not paying you $500 with a Glock you fucked with. So anyway, then I'm like, well, you know, keep it for self-defense, man. You know, better have that than, you know, sell it and not be able to get something else. And he goes, yeah, well, it's like this, you know, my wife, she delivers newspapers early in the morning. And she's got this .22 pistol in her console. And I said, what she got that for? Scaring dogs or something like that? I mean, that's what he was going to say, you know? People fuck, you know, dogs fuck with her or whatever. He's like, no, man, she's out early in the morning, you know? And I just figure someone comes to her car window and is messing with her. I told you to pull that pistol out of that console and you just put all those bullets right in their face. And I go, oh, yeah, you think that's going to work? Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have got shot with a .22. I'm like, you know, 10 times or whatever. And I go, yeah. But you probably don't go around fucking with people early in the morning in their cars, right? So could we agree that their mentality might be different than yours? Well, yeah. And I go, did your wife ever practice pulling the gun out of the console? Well, did she ever practice pulling the gun out of the console and shooting through her fucking auto glass from a confined position, seatbelted in the dark, at a target that might be moving? Oh, you didn't think about that, did you? Because you have this fantastical plan, this fucking Jason Bourne action movie idea in your head of how things are going to go based on things you can't control. And so that becomes a big issue for people. No plan is going to survive contact. So make sure that you are not basing the outcome on these fantastical Jason Bourne-ish moves you're going to pull, but rather sound techniques and concepts that you're good at. Assume you'll be hurt. A lot of people, this was the first time they'd ever been in training and got hurt. I cleaned up blood no less than 6 times. People bled from the hands mostly, but also, you know, we got a pretty good head wound going. Assume you're going to be hurt. For most people, this is the first time they'd ever had opposition while shooting their guns. It blew their freaking mind. They were like, shit, I got hurt. Man, I took a round in the knuckles. I took a round in the forearm. You know, I took a round through my bicep. Like, wow, how would that affected my ability to continue on? So assume you'll be hurt and practice accordingly. It's stressful. People got wound up pretty tight. They were nervous, appropriately. This is a stressful thing. So the more you work under stress, the better inoculated you're going to be to it. No one can properly prepare for a real-world gunfight until you've been in enough real-world gunfights. And most people haven't even been in enough real-world gunfights for the 1% of the population has ever even been in a gunfight. It's probably not even that. It's like half of a percent that have really gunfight regularly enough to even say that they're used to it. Put them in a different type of gunfight and suddenly they may not be used to it anymore. There's a big difference between firing heavy weapons on a position and being an interpersonal gunfight with a pistol. I'm not saying that one does not prepare for the other. I am saying it's different. So the more you can inoculate yourself to stress, the better off you'll do. Add context, which we've already talked about. Add context because it's important to know what exactly you're supposed to be doing. Know your equipment very well. A lot of these people were handed a piece of training equipment they weren't totally familiar with, but nothing other than an AR, a Glock, a Smith & Wesson MMP. It's not like we were handing people, you know, Galil or something like that. Like we were handing people regular equipment, but they didn't know about this thing specifically, which made them think, how much do I really know about my own equipment? Most of them learned, as I mentioned earlier, the Defender does have the advantage. And the Defender has a distinct advantage because they got to pick potentially the best possible position to ambush you from. And so, yeah, if I break into your house and I realize you're coming after me and I have to duck into your den or your kid's room or your laundry room or whatever, I'm going to pick the best possible position that I'm pretty damn sure I'm going to survive from. So that's going to be pretty damn important to understand. The Defender is going to have the advantage. If you're moving from cover, try to move to cover. Now, that doesn't mean full giant concrete walls. It just means any type of cover slash concealment that buys me an advantage. If I'm going to move someplace else, it ought to be another place that has an advantage. Some of you guys might have heard this referred to as a position of advantage. If I move from one position to another position, it's because that other position gives me at least the same, if not a better, advantage. Either get into or out of a room. A lot of people got shot in doorways, as is always the case. Get into the room, get out of the room. Don't linger. Don't be halfway in, halfway out. Commit to a decision once you've decided. Like we talked about earlier, don't get bogged down by indecision. And lastly, big lesson learned from the alumni event, doing structural work. And this is just a couple hours that these people did this. It's not like they were there, you know, for hours and days. So these were lessons learned in the three scenarios that they went through. These are incredibly important and valuable lessons these people learned. The last bit was have accountability for your people. After this event, one of the things that a lot of people took away was they were like, I went through that scenario just trying to stay alive, not considering what was behind the wall that I was just firing at. Who was behind me? What if my loved one was with me? Again, what if I'm trying to get out of here? What do I do with my loved ones? What do I tell them to do? What if this is my home? Where are my fire zones and my no fire zones? It's a lot of great lessons I want to share with you guys on this. So again, to go back to the beginning, this is the most dangerous thing you're ever going to do is structural movement with one person. Two people, still dangerous. You start getting a handful of people who are well-trained and are familiar with working together, you can do a lot of cool work in a structure. And you can be pretty lethal and you can be pretty efficient and effective. Single-person arm movement through structure is the most dangerous stuff you're going to do. So many angles, so many possibilities, so many unknowns. Control as many of those variables as you possibly can. One of those biggest ones is getting good training from people who know what the fuck they're doing. Right? All over the country, there are some great people. If you're close here, you're willing to come to Phoenix, obviously, please come train with us. We consider ourselves to kind of know what we're doing. There's other great people who are teaching this. Craig Douglas from ShibWorks, Chris Fry from MDTS, Paul Sharp from Sharp Combatives, whatever his name of the company is. Look up Paul Sharp. Larry Lindemann from Point Driven Training. There's you know, a handful of right, a handful of others. If you have a chance to obviously go train at an organization like Darcy or T1G, or go learn from those kinds of people because you're in active military units and you can go do that, or even Darcy opens up, I think, one class a year to armed citizens, jump in on that shit, man. It's badass, and you will learn amazing things. Get good training and keep practicing and keep training as much as you possibly can on these concepts. They will really help you add good context to your range sessions as well. So anything to add to that, Drew? I pretty much talked the whole fucking time.
That's what you do.
Anything to add to that? That's it?
That's it.
What are your lessons learned? We've done enough structural work.
Mine, the biggest takeaways is just take notes. I'm obviously always preach about taking notes, but really when it comes to this stuff, taking notes is key. Watching people, I always thought that one of the greatest tools you can do is benefit from watching other people's failures, because you remember it a little bit more. You're like, oh man, I really don't want to do what they did. So it kind of sticks with you a little bit more. So it's nice having all those cameras now in the new shoot house where you can watch other people's stuff And then you can, even though we're going to switch up the scenarios and it's not always going to be the exact same, so people can't game it and know exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But watching other people and really learning just proper communication between your partner. If you are going to be doing structural movement with your spouse, obviously I'm fortunate enough to have you as my spouse, so makes it a little bit easier. But really, communication, I think, would be key, whether it's verbal communication or silent communication, knowing that and knowing how to go into a space together, which way one person's going to go, which way another person's going to go, and kind of really learn the movements of your spouse, I think, is also key, or a friend, whoever you're using these tactics with.
Team member.
Yeah. Whatever partner. It might be, is really practice with them quite often. So that way you get to the point where you just know what the other person's going to do. So,
you know, you say you're pretty fortunate to have me as a partner. I'm very fortunate to have you as a partner because you're actually willing to do this stuff. It doesn't seem silly to you. I think that's something that a lot of people miss, you know, in a spouse or a partner or a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, is they trying to convince their significant other or their friends even, or maybe even their kids to like, hey, let's do this. Like, our kids love this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate as a dad to have kids who want to do this stuff.
Yeah.
They want to practice these skills. They think they're fun. They think they're cool. They're learning about really important things. And it increases their own personal confidence in themselves, which flows into other parts of their life.
Yeah.
But I'm very fortunate to have you as a spouse because it gives us the opportunity to work together and you're willing to go, yeah, let's grab the guns and let's move through the house. I mean, we fucked around, even done it with night vision. Like, oh, you think that? Well, let's go fucking do it with night vision. Like, you want to see some really cool shit? Let me show you some cool things you can do with night vision that you can't do. And also let me show you the limitations of doing it with night vision.
Although we did find out that our Ring cameras have a pretty clear.
Holy God. Yeah, I put on – the first time we ever tried night vision, I'm like, yeah, okay, we've worked on this, you know, dry. We've worked on it with, you know, live guns, barrel blocks, and all that kind of stuff. All right, cool. Let's do some night vision now for some fun and you know, have just kind of some fun. And I put on, like, what the fuck is – are there lights everywhere? Holy shit, the IR light cameras on your – yeah, if you have security cameras. It's like it was something that I knew because obviously I've been in those types of environments where I've had to look at security cameras.
But how bright were they?
But
oh, my gosh.
In a confined, like, internal residence of mm-hmm. and having those types of lights or those types of cameras, it was definitely an eye-opening experience for me and a reminder, right, mm-hmm. of like, wow, if I put these things on, I'm going to catch a shitload of light from that, you know, from that camera, that direction, that camera, that direction. So, you know, just important stuff to keep in mind. And like every time, you know, you train or practice, you're always going to find little things.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things we found, you know. And there's also all kinds of other stuff that, you know, might be exposed if you actually just fucking do the work.
Yeah, the other thing is, you know, practice if you have a single story, find somewhere to practice going upstairs, going downstairs. We are fortunate enough to have a two-story house, so we can take in the going up the stairs, going down the stairs, clearing rooms upstairs. So if you have small space, do it. Practice in small space. If you want a bigger space, come to the shoot house and get a bigger space.
3,800 square feet of big space.
So it's, you know, that's what I'm excited to look for is we're going to have some date nights there, maybe, possibly.
Hell yeah. All right, so you guys, you have any questions or you totally disagree with anything we said and you're actually going to base it off something other than fucking Call of Duty, do not contact me if all you've ever done is play Call of Duty. I'm not interested. But if you have some other kind of valid experience, you know, even if it's just a couple of times or, you know, you've got some ideas about structural movement and you're like, why do you do this or why did you say that or whatever, then, you know, hit us up. And again, this is not to be considered any kind of training. This is just an informational exchange. That's all this is. And hopefully opening your guys' eyes to, hey, maybe this is something I ought to pursue. So info@trainingaz.com is always an easy way to email us and get a hold of us. Our independence training moment for this week, don't slow down. When someone is training you, teaching you, instructing you on any physical skill and they say, whoa, 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 slow down. No. What do you want me to spend more time on? Because I'm doing poorly at one speed. I'm not suddenly going to increase my capability by slowing it down. I'm just going to do poorly but slower. If you're a baseball player and your swing sucks, you swing fast or you swing slow, it still sucks. Now, you may spend more time on a part of the swing. Your coach says, hey, man, you need to put, you know, you need to turn your hip into it more. Hey, dude, you're dropping your elbow. You know, there's a thing here you need to spend more time on. But that doesn't mean I have to slow the entire process down. It means I need to spend more time on one thing, which might appear that it's slowing down everything, but it's not. It's just taking longer to accomplish everything. And I know I'm splitting hairs here, but here's one of my pet peeves in the training world. People who are doing poorly in a physical skill, any physical skill, tourniquet application, emergency survival, shooting, whatever, are told to slow down. They're doing poorly, so we tell them to do poorly slower. No. What part are they needing to spend more time on? What specific thing? And shooting, is it my sight acquisition? Am I not getting my sights on the way out? That doesn't mean I need to slow down my draw. It doesn't mean I need to slow down my unconcealing. It doesn't mean I need to slow down my grip. I just need to spend more time, or quote unquote slow down, my sight acquisition. Look for the specific thing you need to spend more time on. I did a full kind of dissertation of this on the Independence Training Instagram page, and I think, Drew, you already posted it up on the Facebook page as well. So If you've got social media, look up Independence Training and see what I'm talking about with the whole don't slow down concept, what we call the stepped learning process. And you can find more information about that. Independence Training Moment brought to you by IndependenceTraining.com. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. We're being hosted in four or five states throughout the rest of the year. We're happy to come to your state, or even if you're in Arizona and you want us to come to your city, we're happy to do that as well. Shoot us an email, info@trainingaz.com. We'll give you all the information about hosting. If you have open enrollment class and you get us the minimum number of students, 10 students for 2 days, then you train for free. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, as we previously mentioned, as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, and MRC Phoenix, McKellar Running Club Phoenix, which is Drew's running group. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Please make sure you check out the other services and shows that they have on the network. Next week, we're going to have a guest we were supposed to have last week, but then our schedules got mixed up, and no big deal. She's still coming on the show. It's going to be Lisa Song Sutton about guns being used as equalizers and also empowering women to carry. Till next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.